सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। Hari Om, everybody. You can hear me okay, no? Everybody can hear me okay? All right. You know, I would recommend that you turn your videos on. Audio, I can understand. You can mute it. But if you can turn your videos on, it's nice. So that I can see people and I can see their reactions, which is nice. It feels like I'm talking to somebody. Otherwise, I'm talking to a blank screen. Anyway, I hope everybody, Hari Om, and everybody had a good summer as I did. And now we are back to our lessons. It started raining in Vancouver, so we know it's September. Anyway, we have, by Gurudev's blessings and grace, completed the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And today we'll be starting on the seventh one. The Bhagavad Gita, as we know, has been commented upon by various masters. The most glorified commentary, of course, is by Bhagavan Shankaracharya, Adi Shankaracharya. But there are others also who have written commentaries. So there are people who have done comparative studies of the commentaries. What does Bhagavan Shankaracharya focus on, or what does some other commentator focus on in the commentary? Bhagavad Gita is the same, it's the same text. But in the commentary itself, what is the point of focus? That is the kind of studies that people do. And what they say is that Bhagavan Shankaracharya's commentary is Vastu Pradhan. Vastu, coming from the Dhatu Vas, the verbal root of that word Vastu is Vas. And Vas means to envelop or to pervade or to cover. From that Dhatu also comes the word Vastra. Vastra means cloth. And we use the cloth to cover our bodies, or cover tablecloth for the table, etc. So when we say Vastu Pradhan, the Vastu there means the Supreme Reality, because it is the Supreme Reality which pervades this entire universe, this entire world of names and forms. And therefore, in Vedanta, the pure consciousness is also referred to as Vastu. And that's where the word Ishavasya Upanishad is coming, right? Ishavasya, Vas, that reality which pervades the whole world. So with Bhagavan Shankaracharya's commentary, what we see is that we have studied his commentary throughout. So what we see that he says in the introductory remarks itself, he says in his commentary that the reason for sorrow is nothing else but delusion. See, we have got many things. You know, I'm sorrowful because I don't have a child. I'm sorrowful because I don't have a job. I'm sorrowful because my health is not well. So we think that sorrow has different reasons. But no matter what reason it is, the basic reason, that reason is arising from a delusory thought that I am the body. And so the original, the source of sorrow is always this delusion. This is what happened to Arjun. We have seen it. He got deluded on the battlefront, thinking that he forgot that he was a warrior, a Kshatriya warrior on the battlefield, and he thought he was the body. And so then everybody became his relatives and grandfather and cousins, etc., and he got sorrowful. So Bhagwan sticks to that thread, and he says that the main cause for sorrow is delusion. So if you want to remove sorrow, then you need to remove delusion. And how do I remove delusion? He says, you have to know the reality. There is no other way. You have to know who exactly you are in reality. Not, you are not what you think you are. I think I'm this body. I think I'm this, you know, emotional person, sentimental person, etc. But you are that supreme reality. So you are that vastu. And that thread he never leaves in his commentary. He has always focused on explanation of what the vastu is. Because if I want to know what it is, then I need an explanation on what that pure consciousness is. And so he constantly has stuck to that. But then there is Madhusudan Saraswati ji. And Madhusudan Saraswati ji is a great devotee. He is the one that has written the Gita Dhyana Shlokas that we hear before the Bhagavad Gita. The one that we just heard before the class started. And also the Pushpika, which is coming at the end. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su Bhagavad Gita. You know, that two lines. That they are not there in the Mahabharata. Bhagavan did not chant those. He in the Mahabharata, if you see, the verses are not, there are no chapters or nothing. There is, it's the whole 700 verses one after the other. There is no division of chapter. All these chapter divisions and all was brought in later on. Okay, and the Pushpika was also added later on. It is not a part of the Mahabharata per se, or it is not a part of the Bhagavad Gita. It is, we consider it as a part of the Bhagavad Gita because the realized master has written it, but in the original text, it is not there. All right. So with Madhusudan Saraswati ji and other commentators, they also recognize that, yeah, delusion is the cause of sorrow. And yes, knowing the reality is the antidote for this delusion. And so antidote for this, all the sorrows, no matter what sorrow it is, it's the cure is knowing the reality. But how to know the reality also they focus on. So what they are also focusing on is the sadhana aspect, the self-effort. See, okay, we know that that Arjun was deluded. Okay, we are also deluded. The jiva is deluded, if you say. And then there is the reality. Okay, now we know about the reality. But how does this deluded jiva get to that point? That is also very important. Nah? If you don't know the way, then what is the point of knowing the goal? And then we don't know how to get there. So the other masters, other commentators, they also focus on the sadhana aspect. There is focus on the delusion, cause for sorrow, and the antidote. But also in between, there is that focus of sadhana. So therefore, what they say is that the first six chapters talk about aham. They talk about me. They talk about the jiva. If you look at the text itself, from chapter one, we saw the delusion. Then in chapter two, Bhagwan gave the highest truth, but he never understood it. And the reason was that he was not prepared for it. So Bhagwan then started preparing him. He gave the principles of karma yoga, three chapters, three, four, and five. Then in six, he says, now you're fit to meditate. So now you meditate. So they say that these six chapters are what are known as Tvam Padam Shodhanam. In the Mahavakya, Tatvam Asi, Tvam is you or me, Jiva, this Jiva, and Shodhanam is purification. So they say that the first six chapters, it talks about the sadhana, that is what it is talking about, is do karma yoga, purify your mind, the means of understanding this reality is through karma yoga. So that is the sadhana. They say that it is the first six chapters talk about the purification of the jiva, because purification of the mind is extremely important. So that is the Tvam Padam, or in Aham Brahmasmi, that is talking about aham, myself. Then from 7 to 13 onwards, it is talking about Tat Padam Shodhanam. And here Shodhanam doesn't mean purification, it means discovery. Discovery of the Tat Pada, which is the self, which is the vastu, which is the pure consciousness. Okay, so the idea is that once the jiva purifies himself and brings himself up to a state where now he is qualified to understand and listen about the reality. And so then Bhagwan, in chapter 7, they say, started talking about the Tat Pada. In the Tatvam Asi Mahavakya, Tat Pada, or in the Aham Brahma Asmi Brahma, the Brahma part. Aham first six, next six Brahma or Tat, and then from 13 to 18 is Asi, the oneness, or Asmi, aham brahmasmi asmi, either asmi or tatvam asi, the asi. So there is the oneness is indicated in the last sex. This is how they divide the this is how they introduce the text, or they claim both are correct, nothing wrong, but Bhagavan Shankaracharya has not given this division, and that's why he probably thinks everybody is quite qualified enough to know, you know. So, but the other masters are there. So this is how this text is kind of devised as per the masters. Now we see that in chapter 7, there is no question asked by Arjun in the beginning. It straight off starts with Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, which is telling us that Bhagavan is now convinced that the Jiva has purified himself enough. Arjun, in that case, or in general, the Jiva has gone through these principles of Karma Yoga. Bhagavan has given the techniques of meditation. Chapter 6, we saw it was all about meditation. And so it's presumed that the Jiva has done meditation. And Bhagavan there also said in the last verse, fixing your mind on me. If you remember the last verse, last few verses, Bhagavan says, first, you know, he gives this external, if you remember chapter 6, external conditions like clean place, solitary place, you know, sit on a animal skin and all those things external, and then the internal preparation. And then, okay, after these two external and what, then what do I do with my mind? Now you fix it on me. Now the question is, okay, fix it on me, Bhagavan, but who is this me? He never explained that. So to explain that, now he starts his discourse from 7 onwards. So because he is now convinced that Arjun is ready, or the Jiva is ready, he doesn't now wait for that for Arjun or the disciple to ask a question. If you remember chapter 2, Bhagavan never started his discourse. His actual teaching started only after Arjun surrendered and asked the question, please tell me why I cannot do my duty. Even though I know that I'm a Kshatriya, even though I know that I'm supposed to fight this war, something is blocking me. Something is, you know, in the way. There's an obstacle. And I know that my thinking is wrong, but I exactly don't know why. And Arjun says, please, Bruhi Tanme, please tell me definitively what exactly I should do. And that's when Bhagavan started speaking. But here he's not waiting, because now the idea is that when the student is ready and when the guru, and the guru will know, see, every student feels I'm ready right now. I am all purified and, you know, everybody else is impure, but every student feels like that. But when the guru feels that, when the guru is convinced, then the guru will start giving the knowledge without any delay. Okay, we have not done Kathopanishad. Have we done Kathopanishad? In Kathopanishad, we see that Lord Yama tests Nachiketas by tempting him with all these dancing girls and riches and elephants and this and that and everything. So that is a test of this child, because Lord Yama thinks, oh, he might be enchanted and he might take all this. And he says no. So the minute he says no, Bhagavan starts his discourse. Lord Yama there, he just says, okay, now I know the student is absolutely ready. So same way here, Bhagavan knows that Arjun is ready. When the Jiva is ready, the Guru will, that's what even Gurudev has said, like, you know, when the flower blossoms, then the bee knows to go there. The flower doesn't go to the bee comes to the flower. And therefore, Gurudev always said, there's no need for us to run after the guru. There is need for us to purify ourselves. So when we purify ourselves, the guru will come. He will come. He will give us the teaching. And he may not be in the form that you think it is your guru. It may be any person. When they say something, it'll click. But you have to be ready for that. And that is the situation now here in Bhagavad Gita, where Arjun is absolutely ready. So without him asking any question, without him saying anything, Bhagavan said, Bhagavan is thinking, now I'm going to tell you, I told you to fix your mind on me. Now I'm going to tell you about me. Bhagavan Krishna, I've told you this before also, is talking from the standpoint of the highest reality. He's not talking from the standpoint of his form. Okay. So with this, we start with the first verse. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Maya Saktamana Partha Yogam Yunjan Madashrayaha Asaushayam Samagrammam Yathadnyasyasi Tatshrunu. With the mind intent on me, O Partha, practicing yoga and taking refuge in me, how thou shalt, without doubt, know me fully, that do thou hear. Now, how to know me, Bhagavan is telling. So, if you see in this, there are three conditions that Bhagavan is putting. The first one is Mai Asakta Manaha. Mai, the first word, the break of that word, that is, there's a sandhi there, therefore it becomes Maya Asakta Manaha. Mai Asakta Manaha. In me, Mai, in me, Asakta attached, in me attached should be your mind. With your mind intent on me, with your mind attached to me. So we have to understand what he means by attached. Mind, we know, is a flow of thought. We have heard that. Mind is thoughts. Mind is flow of thought. Now, attachments, you can't take the mind and put it like chandan paste on somebody's forehead or some tulsi leaf on somebody's forehead. You can't do that. So, if mind is a flow of thought, and if that mind is supposed to be attached to the Lord, then that flow of thought must be towards the Lord. All your thoughts must be focused on the supreme reality. I told you, Bhagavan is not talking as Krishna. So don't think that, oh, but my Ishtadevata is Shiva. Now, am I supposed to be thinking of Krishna? Not like that. Pure consciousness, okay? So the thing, the question might arise that if all the time I'm thinking of Krishna or Rama or whoever, how am I supposed to do my work? Like, am I supposed to do work or what? Or am I just going to sit and think? So the way of doing this asakti, this attachment to the Lord, is to bring Him into each and every situation in our life. It does not mean that I just sit here, do nothing, and just do japa off. It is not possible. That is not possible. A person, young person especially, in the old age, yes, that's what you can do. But when you have family responsibilities and household, and Arjun is a householder. Arjun is supposed to fight the war. Now what, if he says, now he's not saying forget the war and just focus on me. But what it means is that anything that happens in our life. Now, when I say anything, good and bad, both. We must be able to see the divine presence in all situations. Okay, so when good happens to us, when we get success, generally what happens is when something good happens or when something, some result we get, which we wanted something, we did something and we got it, then immediately we say, oh, I put in the effort and I got it. But when something goes wrong, when it doesn't go as per our liking, then we say, why me? Why did God do this to me? See, the point is, you have to be same in both. That is the point. If you say that when good happens, okay, I did it and I got the good result, then when bad comes also, you must not bring God in there then. Then you must say, okay, I didn't and I got the bad. If you're bringing God in the good, then you're allowed to bring God in the bad as well. And that is what is meant by thoughts constantly flowing towards Him. So when any situation comes in our life, and it could be good or bad. So you say, thank you, Lord. If something good happens, you say, thank you, Lord. It was your grace because of which I got this thing. Okay. If the sorrow comes, if something that I dislike, sorrow means I don't like it. Nobody likes sorrow. So something that I dislike comes, then we say, okay, Lord, thank you. You gave me this situation. Now, please also give me the strength to bear it. Because you must understand that the strength also is coming from the Lord to face it. If Lord has given you something, He will also give you the strength. But you must have that faith, that firm faith. And when you do this, you will go above likes and dislikes. That is the whole thing of purification of the mind. Because whether I like the situation or the result or the person or the object or whatever that is happening in my life, whether I like it or whether I dislike it, I am giving the credit for both to the Lord. So my likes and dislikes are shifted. I'm not taking the onus of it. I'm not taking the responsibility of it. So when I can do this, I can see the presence of the Lord in everything, in the divine presence in every situation, then I am mai asakta manaha. So, and we see our, you know, like my dad and all, if we started on a road trip, he will, why that Swamiji is come, you know, now Swarupananji latest, just while sitting in the, just to go to the hall, sitting in the, hey Krishna, Shri Krishna, or somebody else is, hey Ram, just while sitting, just going, no road trip, nothing, just from here to the hall, 5 minutes, right? But that is the point, that in that travel also, in that little journey also, they brought the presence of God. And that is what we can do. It doesn't mean that we have to leave our work. We have to work, okay? But, and that's the whole idea of getting up early in the morning and lighting a lamp. You know, you're covered for the whole day. That is maya saktamana. So early in the morning, you take the name of the Lord. But at night, you take the name of the Lord before going to bed. Your night is covered. Your day is covered. All right. So that is my asakta manaha. That does, don't misunderstand it to be, yeah, I'm just going to sit and take the name. No, that is not possible. It is not possible. So this is what it is. Now, from a Vedantic standpoint, we have to understand here that from this chapter onwards, Bhagavan is also going to be talking, he's going slowly into bhakti. Therefore, this portion culminates with chapter 12, which is bhakti yoga. Because when you, bhakti is of the nature of love. So when you love somebody, you know this mai asakta manaha, where is our, in our children and grandchildren? The minute a person becomes grandparent, all they talk about is the grandchild. That is mai asakta manaha in the grandchild. So if your mind is attached to God, you will talk about God. Wherever your mind is attached, you will talk about it. So from a Vedantic standpoint, see, Brahman, so this is technical. This is not bhakti, not bhakti, no form, nothing. So this pure consciousness, this Brahman or this presence, they say is only in the present. In the present, not in the past or the future. So if you are able to keep your mind in the present moment, at all moments, you are mai asakta mana, you've done. From Vedanta, complete Vedantic technical standpoint. So take your pick. Either you can, it's not possible. I can't. My mind wanders, right? Everybody's mind wanders. But if you can keep your mind, therefore Gurudev has said, keep your mind where your hands are. So whatever work that you're doing, focus on it with 100% concentration. If at that moment, while you're doing any kind of work, you've forgotten the past, you've forgotten the future, you're only in that work, you are maya saktamana. You fulfill this maya saktamana, this condition you fulfill. Or the simpler way, bhakti way, okay, sitting in the car, starting the car, okay, take the name of the Lord. Anytime you, I've told you the story of the, you know, the genie who then the man was told that construct a pole and ask that genie to go up and down, otherwise he's going to eat you. So the mind is the genie. So the mind is like that. If you let it run, it'll eat you. It will always give bad thoughts, and all kinds of thoughts which are not necessary at all will come. So when the mind is not engaged in doing some work, engage it in taking the name of the Lord. That is also maya sakta manaha. There also that is fulfilled. Okay. So two things. One is that the flow of thought should be towards the Lord. Does that mean I leave my work? No, you do not leave your work. You bring the thought of the Lord in all situations in your life. All right. And it could be any situation. You do a, you know, you cook, it doesn't turn out good, it turns out good. Anything. Good, bad, everything. Okay. Partha referring to Arjuna. Partha means son of Pritha. So actually Partha also refers to all the other Pandavas. Pritha is the name of their mother, Kunti. Yogam Yunjan and then Madashraya. These are the two other this thing. Yogam Yunjan means mind, yoga and taking refuge, practicing yoga. Yoga coming from the word yuj, to join. So Yogam Yunjan here means that whatever efforts I put for getting whatever, I must be able to recognize the grace of God in there. I must be able to recognize that, yes, I have put forth so much efforts, but I know that unless the grace of the Lord was there, this would not have happened. So what happens here is, some people will argue that, okay, if nothing is going to happen without the grace of the Lord, I may as well wait for the grace to come. Why I should put any self-effort forth? Why should I put forth any self-effort? Because you're saying that no matter whether I put effort or not, things will not happen unless the grace is there. The point is, grace and self-effort are related. Unless there is self-effort, grace will not come. See, grace is of two kinds. One is Samanya grace and one is Vishesh grace. So Samanya grace, Samanya Krupa, which is called, Samanya means general. So the general grace is on all of us. It was there on Duryodhan. It was there on Arjun as well, because they were both breathing and healthy and able to fight. So just the fact that we are healthy, in good condition, and even not even in good condition, even breathing, if we are just breathing, that grace we have of the Lord. Because without the grace of the Lord, we wouldn't have been able to do that either. So the grace is already there. But if you want some special grace, then you have to put in some special efforts. Because breathing, what, we were born and now we are breathing and there's no effort in breathing anymore. Okay, so it's just general. But if you want some special grace, if the sun is shining outside and I keep the blinds closed, and the sun doesn't come in, then I cannot complain that there is no grace of the sun on me. So the self-effort that I need to put in, minimum, is to open the blinds. So the more I open the blind, that much more sunlight will come in. So if I open it only little, then little sunlight. If I open it more, more sunlight. If I open it fully, then my room will be flooded with sunlight. So depending on the effort, that much grace will keep coming. Okay, that's why they say that if you walk one step towards God, God will walk 10 steps towards you. But we don't even walk one step. We are so much busy with our own things. So that is what it is. In an exam, when a child is writing an exam, if the passing mark is 50 or 40 or whatever, and if he writes 48, he writes enough material which gives him 48 marks, then to pass him, the teacher might give him 2 marks. But if he writes only worth 2 marks, then 48 marks are not going to come as grace. Okay? So that is how grace works. So we must never say that, oh, if the grace is there, it will happen. Why should I do work and all that? No, we should continue with our efforts. So that is the trick of becoming effortless. You put in effort, but you remain effortless because there is no worry. You don't worry. That is also principle of Karma Yoga also. Like, Karmanne Badhika Raste, he said in chapter 2, he said, your right is on the action alone. It is not on the result. So that is what we should do, that the result will come, will not come. That is grace of the Lord. But I will put in whatever effort, to the best of my ability, I will put in the effort. That's why in Upadesh Sar, Bhagwan Raman Maharshi says, Karturadneya Prapyate Phalam, Karma Kim Karam, Param, Karma Tajjanam, right? How do you call karma as supreme? Because people, this is how people think. I do the work and I get the result. Where is the question of God in there? What did God do? They forget that they were breathing. Excuse me, when you're doing work, that original breath was coming from God. Otherwise, how you would have done that work? They forget that. And that's why they say, I did the work and I got the result. So this Yogam Yunjan, is that attitude should not be there. It should be that I am putting efforts, I am going to put efforts, but I fully recognize the fact that unless the grace is there, the results that I want, results will come, because karma always will bring result. But the result that I want, if it has to come, then the grace has to be there. Okay, and that also then fulfills Maya Asakta. When we remember this thought, it is also fulfilling Maya Asakta Manaha, because I am recognizing the fact that, okay, I'm putting in the effort, but God is there to give me the result. So Mahi Asakta Mana also gets fulfilled in that. And then Madashrayaha, Mother Ashraya, Madashraya means taking my support, Ashraya support, taking my support. See, various people take support of various things. Okay, if you see in the material world, if there is a politician, then he needs the votes. So he needs the support of the people. People take support of money. You know, we feel secure if we are going to be retiring, then if we have a sufficient retirement fund or whatever, we feel secure. And in general, in the world, there is a goal that people have, and then there is a means. Every goal, there is some means, but the means and the goal are different. So if I want to be a doctor, then of course the means are getting a university degree, and also the means are that I get a degree and then go to medical school. Or so whatever the goal is, there is a goal and there is a means, and then the means and the goal are different. And when the goal is reached, the means are dropped. When he says, Madashrayaha, take my support, here we already know what the goal is. The goal is him only, right? Because he said, with mind intent on me, in meditation, who should I think about is him. So we are trying to reach this supreme consciousness, pure consciousness. So what he's saying is, even to reach there, you take my support itself. You know, in our life, what we do, we have a goal and we make God the means. That's what we're doing every day when we pray. We light a lamp and we say, you know, let this happen. I bought a lottery ticket. Let me win. Let me get a job. Let me get a this. Let me get a that. So goal is something totally different. Goal is, you know, either marriage or house or job or bonus, promotion, whatever it is, you know, child getting married, getting grandchild, whatever. And now God is becoming the means. Because we are praying to God, please, God, give me this, give me this, give me this, right? So means is God and goal is something else. What he's saying is the means and the goal have to be both me. This is what is meant by Madashraya. So where the means and the goal are one and the same. And what is that? God alone. God alone. So these three conditions are there. Mahi Asakta Manaha, Yogam Yunjan and Madashraya. So when I fulfill these three conditions, O Lord, then what is going to happen? Asaushayam Samagram Mam. So the two words is used again here. Asaushayam, doubtless. Saushaya is doubt. Asaushayam is without any doubt, means absolutely doubt free and complete. Samagram is complete, complete. So what he's saying is, when these three conditions are fulfilled, then I will give you yatha nyasasi tat shrunu. So listen to this knowledge, which will be doubt free and complete when you have completed the conditions in the first line. So when you've done the first three things, then now I will tell you the doubt free and complete. So doubt free means we must not have, I've told you this before. See, you know, when suppose sometimes I'm running, right? And then there's a little pebble that gets into my, little rock gets into my shoe. And if it's in the position where the arch is, it doesn't bother me. And then when I run, it moves and then it pricks. So this doubt is like that. What happens is we hear things in class from our teacher. And we think, oh, we perfect, perfect, perfect. But when we go home, then this doubt starts coming. You know, some or the other doubt, like that little rock poking us, this doubt will come. And when this doubt comes, it becomes an obstacle in meditation. Because in meditation, there should be absolutely no doubts. That's why mananam is required. Mananam is prescribed, the reflection. Reflection, Shravanam is to remove ignorance and Mananam is to remove doubts. But now Bhagwan is telling him that I will give you this doubt-free knowledge. So the doubts have to be not there. There should be no doubts as regards the understanding of that supreme reality. So in the understanding of it, we must not have absolutely any doubt. How it is. So when the teacher tells us the self in me is the self in all, you must say, how come that's possible? That thing should not come. And what Bhagwan is saying here is that I will give you that doubt-free knowledge. This is what Bhagwan is telling him. I will tell you that doubt-free knowledge where you will have no doubts as regards the understanding. And as regards the goal, what is to be understood, your knowledge will be complete. Now, what does he mean by complete knowledge? With the pure consciousness, there are two aspects to it. Okay, one is the transcendental, the absolute nature of the reality, which is Sat-Chit Anand, the principle of conscious existence, consciousness, and bliss. It's a principle, and other than that principle, actually there is nothing else. Actually, from the highest standpoint, other than that principle, this world really doesn't exist. But I see the world. I'm experiencing it. I feel the heat. I feel the cold. I feel the joy. I feel the sorrow. I feel all this. So then the other part of this reality that needs to be understood is his immanent nature, his vibhuti in this world. So there are two aspects that need to be understood. And this is what he means by complete. Otherwise, knowing only one without the other is incomplete knowledge. See, if you only understand the transcendental nature, but then you're seeing the world. And if you cannot recognize the presence of the Lord in the world, then it is not complete knowledge. It's partial knowledge. What we have right now is we see the world and we think that that is it, because what you see is what you believe in, most of us, right? So we think this is partial knowledge. Having partial knowledge is not wrong. It is not wrong because that is what we are seeing. But to think that that partial knowledge is complete knowledge is a mistake. What is a mistake is to think that this is it, that the what I see is it, and there's nothing beyond this. That is not correct. So what I see is there, okay? And plus there is something beyond what I see, should be understood. So then when I go beyond and I understand this principle, then that principle also I should be able to see in the world. And the way I see it in the world is by recognizing the fact that there is this existence principle in all the objects that I see, because of which I see them even. If they were not existing, would I see, do I see horns on a rabbit? I don't, because it's not existing at all. But I do see the rabbit because that rabbit has that existence principle in it. So to have that vision to see that existence principle in every object, that is why Gurudev, when he was asked what tree is that, he said it is existence in the form of a tree. That sort of vision needs to be cultivated. That sort of a vision, he says, I will give you. So when you're looking at my vibhuti, this is called vibhuti yoga of Bhagwan, which in chapter 10 he will tell all his vibhutis, 75 vibhutis he will give. So that is the vibhuti yoga. Vibhuti means, that's why we have named Chinmay vibhuti. What is Chinmay vibhuti in Pune? It is the vibhuti of Gurudev, like how he, you know, his, that's why it's all about him, right? So that is his glory. Vibhuti means glory. So you must be able to see my glory in the world, in even in inert objects, in animals, in plants, everything. You must be able to see my vibhuti, and you must also be able to recognize my yoga sthiti. Yoga sthiti is that transcendental principle of existence, consciousness, and bliss. So these two aspects, and that is what he's going to explain later, what is his lower aspect. So one is, he says, is my lower nature, and one is my higher nature. So both these natures have to be understood incomplete. And that's what he means by saying samagram. So as regards what is to be understood, knowledge has to be complete. It will be complete. That is what he's actually telling. He's promising Arjun that when you fulfill these three, then I will tell you, tachrunu, listen, he says, I will give you a complete understanding of what is to be understood, and your understanding will be totally doubt-free. Okay? So this is what he begins with. So what he is now, so this is basically mayi asakta manaha. Two conditions, just to quickly revise, is the flow of thought should be towards him. How do I do that? By bringing him into every single situation in my life, whether it is good or bad. Or if you can do that, keep your mind in the present all the time, which is not easy, but I'm just telling you that. That also falls under Maya Sakta Manaha. Understanding that, yes, I have to put efforts through. I have to. There is no other way. Bhagavan has said in chapter 3, nobody can stay without doing karma. You know, finally you're breathing, you're doing karma. Digestion, blinking of the eyelids, everything is falling under karma. So nobody can live without doing karma, action, effort. But recognize that the results will come only because of his grace. So yogam yunjam. And madasha, you reach me with my help only. There is no other help there. Recognize that it is me that you have to surrender. And he'll say that in later on. He says, maya maya duratya, he'll say. This maya is very difficult to cross over. You need to surrender to me. So taking my support for the as the means and goal to be same, then your understanding about the knowledge will be doubt-free, and what is to be understood, you will understand incomplete. So my higher nature as well as my lower nature, because both have to be understood properly. All right. Now what he's going to do is he is going to praise the knowledge itself. Okay, because, you know, if I'm telling you something ordinary, then you may not pay attention, you know, but if I tell you something very important, I'm going to tell you, then suddenly you will be all alert. So he will praise the knowledge, and then he will praise the listener. In the third verse, he will praise Arjun, the disciple. So now, you know, disciple also feels very great. You know, I'm also great. Knowledge is also great. Now the disciple is going to be very alert. So in verse 2, ज्ञानं तेहं सविज्ञानं इदं वक्ष्याम्य शेषतः यज्ञात्वा नेह भूयोन्यत ज्ञातव्यं अवशिष्यते. I shall declare to thee in full this knowledge combined with realization, which being known, nothing more here remains to be known. Now understand, when he says nothing more, how important this knowledge is in life. You know, no matter what you achieve, there will always be something more to be achieved. Always. You know, when they become the CEO, I remember way back, you know, in Royal Bank, our CEO, he is a CEO. Now he got some $1 million bonus or something. And he said, yeah, but you know, the CEO in US got more than this. So no matter how much you get, no matter what position you reach, there will always be a position higher than that. You may be the CEO of a company. You'll say, no, but I'm not the CEO of such a big, that company is more big and I want to be the CEO of that. So in the world, there is no goal which is really the highest. There's always something higher. Whereas here, this goal, he says, is this is what he said. It's the highest goal. So how important this is to be achieved. What he's telling Arjun is, understand the importance of it, because knowing this, there will remain nothing for you to do, nothing for you to achieve, nothing for you to gain. That much high knowledge now I'm going to give you. Jnanam teham savidya. Okay, not only I'm going to give you knowledge, I'm also going to give you vidya. Now here we have to see this. Jnanam, when he says, it's what is paroksha, what is known as, there are two words, paroksha and aparoksha. So paroksha knowledge is that knowledge which is gained through the senses. So it is a dependent knowledge. So when we listen to the discourse, we have to use our ears, and for the sound to go in, there has to be air. If somebody is talking in vacuum, we can't hear. If I have to see somebody or some person or movie or whatever, then I need light. Otherwise, you know, in the full dark, how the eyes will see. So this paroksh jnanam, when he's saying paroksh jnana, which is whatever I'm telling you is paroksh jnana. Means whatever I'm speaking, or if you speak to me, or this is all falling under paroksh jnana, because it is a dependent knowledge. It is dependent on your senses. If you can't hear, then you can't, your sound, world of sound is not there for you. If you can't see, then the world of color and form is not there for you. So it's to know color and form, you need eyes. to know sound, you need ears. So all that is gained through the senses is known as Parokshnyana. But Aparokshnyana is something which you know inherently, like you know yourself. I've told you this example. If you're standing in a pitch dark room, you may not even be able to see your hand in front of your eyes, but inherently you know that you are there. And that is Aparokshnyana. So in this world, every other knowledge falls under Parokshnyana. Every other knowledge is dependent, except the fact that I am. Who I am, I may not know, but I know that I am. Every child even knows that. He knows, it's me, you know, don't touch my toy. Even that baby knows that, right? This is my mother. Don't. He'll tell the other child, no, you don't pick up my, don't go near my mom. So I am is the only Aparokshnyana that is there in this world. Everything else Paroksha. Now Bhagwan is saying, now the thing is this Aparokshnyana, or to give you an example, is we can hear from somebody that something is very big, you know, Niagara Falls, Iguazu Falls, whatever, pyramids, etc. That is jnana. That is for, you've heard it. When you actually go see it yourself, then it is called Aparokshnyana. It means not from Vedantic standpoint, huh? But so Aparokshnyana is also wisdom. It means you have experienced it yourself. But the real meaning of Aparoksha, please understand, is only to know the self. That is only, but when we give our examples are limited. So when we want to explain Paroksha and Aparoksha, what we say is Jnana is that which you have heard, but when you experience it yourself, if I tell you, oh, Rasmalai is very tasty, but you have not eaten it. So until you don't eat it yourself, it is not Aparoksha Jnana, it is Paroksha Jnana. You only heard it from me, but when you actually eat it yourself, it will become wisdom. It will be your own knowledge. It'll be your own conviction, like in Manisha Panchakar. It's my conviction that this is good. And in worldly matters, even that conviction doesn't matter, because you might say Rasmalai is very good and somebody who doesn't like sweet will say that's horrible. So in worldly matters, this conviction doesn't, that conviction, because there are people listening to Manisha Panchakam on Saturdays. So please understand that in that, when he says conviction, that conviction can never be shaken. But this or this is not conviction that, yeah, Rasmalai is good, because somebody else will come and say, no, this is horrible. I don't like milk. I'm allergic to milk. This is a horrible dish. So that is not what is meant. But to give you an example of Paroksha and Aparoksha, Paroksha is that which you've heard, and Aparoksha is that which you have experienced. And that is what is meant by Jnanam and Vidjnanam. So now the question arises is that, okay, Jnana you can give me, Bhagwan. Jnana you can tell, because he can tell in great detail, which he will, about himself or about the Supreme Reality, whatever. How you will give me realization? Because that is my own experience. How you can give me? From one standpoint, please understand that it is Bhagwan and he can do anything. So he can also give you realization. We see in the life, I just read yesterday, you know, in the life of Swami Vivekananda, Narendra, when he was Narendra, he was asking all the masters, have you seen God? Have you seen God? This is the question that he used to ask. So he met once then, and nobody could answer, give him a satisfactory answer. Maybe they answered, but he was not satisfied. He met Ramakrishna Paramahansa for the first time, and that's the question that he asked him as well. Have you seen God? And he says, yes. And then he realizes that this one needs experience. So it is said that he put his hand on his head, and Narendra had that experience. And the experience is described, he said that he felt like all the things in the room were flying out somewhere. And ultimately he saw himself flying out and he got scared. And he said, oh my God, stop this, stop this, stop this. And he withdrew his hand and everything came into normal. So if God wants to give realization, God can do that also. Okay, but normally, then, you know, if we hear that, then okay, then I'll wait for God to give realization. So normally, it's like this, you know, if the doctor can prescribe the medication, he can't, I have to take it myself. No, if I'm sick, I can't, you know, if I'm hungry, even forget hungry, can somebody else eat for me? That's why we say, you know, a child in pain, we can't take the pain away. We can comfort the child. We can, you know, give him medicine or put some lotion or whatever we can do. But the actual physical pain cannot be taken by the mother, how much ever she may feel like taking it. But we can't. Okay. So that's why the question arises. Bhagavan is saying here, Jnanam teham savvijnanam idam. Jnana along with vijnana I will give you. What it means is, I will give you the knowledge which is so doubt-free, that the minute you meditate, you're going to get the experience. Because now the knowledge is going to be so solid in his mind that there is absolutely no doubt. Knowledge is absolutely complete, both higher, lower, whatever there is, left, right, center, whatever knowledge there is so complete and doubt-free in his mind that he will have no choice but to realize. That is what it means. From one standpoint, Bhagavan can do it. Please understand, if you have enough bhakti, if you do enough upasana, if you do enough tapasya, if you do enough karma, if you purify yourself, he can give it to you. But from normal standpoints, what he's meaning is that I will give you that much knowledge that you will have no choice but to realize. So he's Vakshamam asheshataha, the word. So I will tell you, Vakshamam is to tell. I will tell you asheshataha, without keeping anything behind. I told you once before also, you know, people tell recipes, then one little point they miss out and the thing doesn't turn out like their thing. I'll tell you one secret about baking, which I remembered. So this good friend had told me. When you bake anything and they say add butter, see, generally the butter is in the fridge. So what we do is we take the butter. I don't know if you guys, but you know, normally what we'll do, they'll heat it in the microwave and they'll add it. Okay, now here the trick is that apparently it should never be added like that. So when it is said to add butter, you must soften the butter naturally by bringing it out of the fridge. And that naturally soft butter, when you add to your cakes or any kind of baking, I'm telling you now, asheshataha, then it will be a totally different taste. Believe me. And if there are eggs to be added, they need to be beaten up first before you add the flour and all that. Then there'll be again a difference. So these are these little things that people leave out. You know, they say, okay, add butter. See, as per them, they've told complete, no? They say, okay, this much butter, this much, this is you do. But they don't tell you this little trick that, you know, the butter, don't melt it in the microwave and add. That is not adding butter this way. So this is what he means by Asha, but it's Bhagwan. So he's not going to, and it's his favorite disciple. He was wanting, that was the purpose of Bhagwan's life to take birth, is to give this knowledge out. Now the situation has arisen, it's his perfect disciple. He's not to hold anything back. So he says, Asheshata, without leaving even a tiny bit out, I will give you this knowledge, having known yajnyatva neham, having known which there will be nothing remaining. Avashishyate, jnatam, jnatavyam avashishyate. There will be nothing remaining for you to know. So this is how this great, this knowledge is. That is the purpose of this verse. That the knowledge, first the adhikari in the first verse, who is qualified, the one who has the three. Now the importance of the knowledge. Now the importance of the listener. So we will read this and then we will go into it in detail next time. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschidyatati siddhaye yatatamapi siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvataha. Among thousands of men, one perchance strives for perfection. Even among those successful strives, only one perchance knows me in essence. So see, Bhagwan here is just word meaning I will give you. We'll take it up next time. Among thousands and thousands of men, how he's praising Arjun means what he's telling Arjun in short, that you are among those thousands of men who want to know this because he has asked for the knowledge, right? So how important are you? There are so many people, nobody came and asked me. You are the only one. So he's praising the disciple. He's praising this thing. He says there are very few who even strive to, you know, reach me. Few strive. We see that, you know, in the mission, hardly anybody, right, coming for the lectures compared to the general population. So that way. Even among the ones who strive, there's maybe one might come to me. Very famous verse this is, very often quoted everywhere. So we will stop here today. Are there any questions? We'll go into this in detail next time. Are there any questions for today? Rashmi, any questions? Anybody? Everybody okay? All right. So we will close for today and we'll continue with the verse 3 next time. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. I'll see you all next time.